is Track Phantom with Joel Rosario. Track Phantom, Wire to Wire in the Macabre.
Wolf, these Dyna Ghost has led the entire trip, and he still is clear at the eighth pole. Hush of a Storm's running a good one. Cellist is launching his big charge. It's Wolfie's Dyna Ghost.
By the Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
And thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us on Off to the Races this morning. A very big show in front of us, a major dedication, and we'd like to welcome Harrisonburg ESPN to our audience. Picking up Harrisonburg, thanks for coming along as we cover racing through the Triple Crown, through the meet at Colonial Downs, through Saratoga, through the Breeders' Cup. Come aboard, and yeah, second year for Harrisonburg. We appreciate you tuning in, and yeah, great season, JMU basketball season, football season too. Spent a lot more time in Harrisonburg over the winter, and got a chance to see the new arena there. JMU, got to fill that thing up. Today on Off to the Races, a real treat. We had the opportunity to catch up with the uncatchable, and that's Ron Turcotte. He's, of course, the rider of Secretariat. Spoke to him yesterday. We'll have that interview in the late portion of the show. It's actually going to become part of a two-part series. Just so much good material there, a story that has no bottom. Every time I talk to Ron Turcotte, I find things even more fascinating than the time before, and you'll hear that here over these next 2 weeks. The big statue dedication, Secretariat in Ashland today. Big racing action, as well as they run the Florida Derby today, the Arkansas Derby, the UAE Derby. We have already had some Triple Crown prep racing this morning from Dubai, and we'll bring you those results in that race call in just a moment. But let's go back to last week. Also on the show, don't let me, with Oaklawn, we got David Longinati joining us live from Oaklawn later in the show. Frank Vespi around the corner with John Piazic, Laurel Handicapper for theracingbiz.com. They'll take a look at a couple races and talk about some developments in Maryland. But let's go back to last week, the Louisiana Derby. We had John Dooley, the track announcer, on the show for us, and Track Phantom, who you heard in the opening there, was actually the favorite for the Louisiana Derby, and the major Kentucky Derby prep race, 100 points to the winner, that can move you towards the starting gate. And let's see how John Dooley called last week's Louisiana Derby.
It's Track Phantom who leads coming toward the quarter pole, but Common Defense has been right there with the front runner. It's Track Phantom and Common Defense. They're a neck apart as they turn for home. Antiquarian is sweeping outside of Tuscan Gold. Then toward the inside, Awesome Ruta, Hall of Fame down there with the rail. Catching Freedom is unwinding on the extreme outside through the final quarter of a mile. And it's Common Defense toward the inside. Track Phantom determined. Track Phantom sticking that neck out. Just holds Common Defense, moving up Tuscan Gold. And here comes Catching Freedom, who's charging for Flavian Pratt. They come past the 16th, last to first. It's Catching Freedom to win the Louisiana Derby.
Yeah, Brad Cox delivering the winner there of Flavian Pratt, the jockey, and Catching Freedom. We hope that you were tuning in late into the show last week as we gave out the exacta. Caitlin Free and I both liked Catching Freedom, and Anna Marie. I actually have a future ticket on Anna Marie as well, filling up the second position there. So $8.60 to the winner, the exacta. you had it, $39.10 for a buck. So hopefully you pick that up there. And Track Phantom running fourth in that field. Her race, actually, Caitlin Free's race at Turfway Park, they had a derby prep as well. And the race that has had so many different names, the Jim Beam, the Spiral Stakes, I think it was the GalleryFurniture.com Stakes at one point. The Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway Park had endlessly as a big favorite in the race. Let's hear how Tony Callow called the Jeff Ruby.
Sees the Gray is launching his charge. He's four wide at the quarter pole, getting within two. And here comes Endlessly. Endlessly is really closing in strongly. He's all dressed up in Sunday's best. He swings one from the outside. A ton of momentum at the top of the lane for Endlessly. And here he comes with his run. Endlessly makes his move at the eighth pole. And he has come away with the lead. Endlessly storming home. And look at him. Endlessly is free and focused in the Jeff Ruby, and he's a powerful winner.
All the races in the road to the Kentucky Derby Championship are 100-point races now, including the two that we just heard, and other than the Lexington, which is sort of like a last gasp, that's only a 20-point race. But these are all 100-point races. Endlessly wins as the favorite on the all-weather, actually second in the Derby standings, but may move to the turf. Remember, Turfway is that synthetic all-weather surface, so Endlessly can go to the Derby if he wants, but trainer Michael McCarthy, that's the trainer, not the jockey, is contemplating what to do with Endlessly. So, but congratulations to those connections, $4.88 for the winner there. I do not have the actual chart yet, but let's play a race that was actually run earlier today. That's right. We've had a Derby prep race already today that was run in Dubai, part of the World Cup, big World Cup race coming up. The UAE Derby, though, has produced a lot of interest toward the Triple Crown. There's only really one foreign horse that might have the opportunity to run in the Derby, targeting this, logistically making sense to focus on running in the Derby, and has been so, and that's a horse by the name of Forever Young. The only thing I know about this track announcer is I understand he's the youngest track announcer in the country. Here's how they just ran the UAE Derby in Dubai moments ago.
As they get into the running here, Autobahn takes over. Forever Young on the one rein there, but balances up now, comes up to the outside of Autobahn, who has to be brave. It's Forever Young, though, for Japan, who comes up to the outside of Autobahn, goes past by a length. Forever Young drawing away here in the late stages, and it's another Japan domination in the UAE Derby.
Yeah, just like Derma Sotogaki, who ran that UAE Derby last year in 1:55.81. Ooh, that's fast. Here you have Forever Young. This might be a legitimate threat to run in the Kentucky Derby, so and really be a factor in it. We'll see. Seems to be moving forward a little bit, though. It's never happened that a horse that ran in Dubai has come back and won the Kentucky Derby. So we'll have to see how that was just moments ago. Forever Young looks like he's headed to Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May to try and become perhaps what with a target that is almost impossible to catch up with, and that's to run that Derby like Secretariat, where today in Ashland later today they'll be doing the statue dedication. I guess this thing is finally going to be mounted and will be still at least for a while after running all over the country last year. That big Secretariat statue, a big day planned in Ashland, and Daryl Wood will be out there later today. Daryl, good morning.
We all thought 1973 was tougher Secretariat. This past year has been brutal. He's been all over the place.
I mean, he really has just a phenomenal statue. Stay tuned, everybody, to listen to Ron Turcotte in the second half of the show. You'll want to hear his comments not only about the statue, but Secretariat himself and Riva Ridge. What's the day look like today?
I'll tell you what, they've had so much publicity for this event in all media around Richmond, Ashland, all over Central Virginia, and the weather's cooperating. Going to be about 70 degrees and partly sunny. Everything starts at 11 o'clock and goes through 4 o'clock, but they're showing the movie in the Ashland Theater. They've got a big street festival going on. All the stores and restaurants in town have got Secretariat-themed specials and everything else. So going to be a lot of fun. And it culminates at 2 o'clock with the actual statue dedication. And Kay Tweedy, obviously Penny Chenery's daughter, and Jocelyn Russell, who was the sculptor of this magnificent bronze statue, they're going to be leading the way in that ceremony. But the statue is in place. I can just see thousands of people out there today, so it's going to be fun. And for the folks that can't make it out there, we're going to stream it live. Just go to virginiahorseracing.com, and that'll link it to either the YouTube page or the Facebook page. But we'll be streaming the actual dedication at 2 o'clock, Nick.
Yeah. Funny event yesterday. I had just talked to Ron Turcott. Actually, for whatever reason, we got the inspiration to head out to Ragged Branch. Never been there, even though I know the distiller out there, the owner of the property, Alex Toomey, who we had on the show last year. And I'm sitting there just catching up with him, and there's a group behind us sampling the bourbon, and they were headed, get this, Daryl, to this event today. From Ohio, of all places.
Wow.
So I've had a great conversation with them on the porch, and I know they're listening this morning. And just shows you how big Secretariat still is 51 years after winning the Triple Crown.
Yeah, we've got a promotional booth set up there today, but the thing I enjoy most is just hearing people's stories about what the horse means to them, meant to them, how the legacy and the interest and everything else have been passed down to their children and their grandchildren. So it's very exciting just to see people, the glow in their faces when they talk about Secretariat. And today's going to be just a great, great memory for everybody involved.
It's maybe technically a day off for you, but you won't have many Saturdays available over the next 2 months as the meet at Shenandoah Downs starts next week. Maybe just a tip on some of the events we'll be talking about next week.
Yeah, going for 7 weeks this spring, starting, like you said, Nick, next Saturday, April 6th through May 19th. We'll be going every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. You can bet the action online, any major online betting vendor. You can bet the action at Rosie's, Colonial Downs, and of course we hope people come out to the Shenandoah Valley just between Harrisonburg and Winchester to Woodstock, Virginia, where we're based out of, and check out the action. It's a lot of fun. Cards run about 3.5 hours. A lot of promotions, a lot of buzz, barn area filled. We put the first cards together this coming Wednesday. So urge people to go to shenandoahdowns.com and check out all the fun festivities going on. And yeah, it's a busy spring with Steeplechase and Point to Point and Secretariat and Harness and Colonial on the horizon.
Yeah, just a half hour away from our Harrisonburg listeners new to the show this morning for this season. So yeah, take note of that. Derby plans, great place to go see the Derby. Throwback track. If you can't make the Derby, make the Preakness. Looking forward to the meet, live racing. It's only, so we sort of wind down late in the year, but we also wind up slowly at the beginning of the year, but it's really starting to pick up steam now, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So, looking forward to a really busy and safe and fun spring.
Great. Daryl, thanks a lot. Great to have you back in the leadoff. Zen did a good job last week, but great to have you back, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good stuff. Enjoy all the big stakes today.
Great. Daryl Wood joining us on Off to the Races this morning. So, the leader, just recapping the leaderboard here for the Kentucky Derby, bringing in the results from last week's racing. You have Catching Freedom with the most points here with that win in the Louisiana Derby, 125 points. Endlessly, who we mentioned earlier, may or may not run in the Derby, may stay on the turf or get to the turf. Track Phantom actually is third, 70 points. West Saratoga, Timberlake, who's running today in the Arkansas Derby, 66 points. Anna Marie, who completed the Exacta last week, has 65 points. Then you have horses like Door Knock, Domestic Product, Sierra Leone, Deterministic, No More Time, Common Defense with 37 points. So these are some Fierceness running today in Florida. Big race for Fierceness today. I think that's probably most people following the Derby will probably want to see that Florida Derby with Fierceness and just see which Fierceness shows up. The horse that won by six lengths in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, or the horse that ran third in his 24 debut. It's going to be interesting to see how this horse does. We're going to actually switch venues, though, and head out to Hot Springs, Arkansas, where I'm learning more about Oaklawn Park, and the more I learn about it, the more I like about it. As if the marketing hasn't been exceptional, they get the added bonus of, I think, being in the Eclipse Zone of all places. And so we have David Longinati, who's joining us, a longtime Oaklawn handicapper, and now heads the Oaklawn Anywhere Advanced Deposit wagering effort, and he joins us now from Hot Springs. David, good morning.
Good morning. It's a happy Arkansas Derby Day. Or here, it's just Derby Day. In Arkansas, everyone refers to this as Derby Day, and the first Saturday in May is Kentucky Derby Day.
Yeah, that's, you can see why when you have horses like Curlin and Smarty Jones and a Fleet Alex that win this race and then head on to Louisville. Victory Gallop ran second, and you know, the horse that came out of Colonial Downs out of the first year before they even had the turf came to win this race. But there's really no substitute for American Pharoah coming in and winning this race and just having a great time in Arkansas. Tell us about Oaklawn and just the history of the race.
Well, we're in a unique position where, you know, Hot Springs, Arkansas is not a big city. It's one of, matter of fact, we're probably located in terms of population, probably the smallest venue of any racetrack in the country, or any, you know, top racetrack in the country. And we will draw, you know, our population base in the city of Hot Springs is about, you know, 39,000, and we'll have, what we like to say is on a good Arkansas Derby Day, everyone in Hot Springs comes and they bring a friend with them. So, I mean, our record attendance is, you know, 72,000. Obviously, you know, today we you know, hope to have a, you know, on-track crowds are good here. And to be honest with you, we think that's one of our major recruiting terms when it comes to, like, trying to go after these top three-year-olds, because we're the only racetrack where a three-year-old will be able to experience being in front of a large, large number of wild and crazy racing fans before the Kentucky Derby.
Big crowd. Now, you know, it's 76 degrees today. The race will go off at 7:47 Eastern time. Warm and sunny. CNBC Peacock has coverage, as well as FanDuel. But you're talking about, you know, fans in the grandstands. I did not realize this. The more I read up about Oaklawn, the more intrigued I am about the place. The first grandstand track in the country under glass in 1904. I mean, where did this track has been around the block a little bit?
Yeah, this is, we're actually celebrating our 120th year this year. It's hard to think, and you know, 20 years ago was the Smarty Jones year, and that was the year that our owner Charles Sella put up a centennial bonus. Whereas Smarty Jones, you know, if any horse was going to win the Arkansas Derby, the Rebel Stakes, which is our main prep for the Arkansas Derby, the Arkansas Derby and the Kentucky Derby, he'd give away a $5 million bonus. And when Smarty Jones did that, it kind of rejuvenated Oaklawn in a mass respect. Then the next year, we had a Fleet Alex. A few years later, you know, we had Curlin. And then, you know, obviously all the way through American Pharoah. So it's done a great job. Of course, you know, our purses are helped by our casino. Purses are unbelievable. When I, you know, was hired here as director of racing, you know, 16 years ago, I was really proud of the fact that, you know, we could offer maiden special weight races of about $38,000 in purses, and now that's like $115,000.
Yeah. I mean, the racing this time of year at Oaklawn, draws national attention. We'll get to the Arkansas Derby here just in a moment. It's just some interesting things about the track. Louis Sella is the president of the track, right? President
of Louis Sella is actually the fourth generation in Oaklawn management. His father was Charles, who was head of our track from the late 60s until he passed, 5 or 6 years ago. Before that, Charles's father, John Sella, was in charge. I think what really put Oaklawn on the map was when Lewis's father, Charles, came up with somewhat of a unique proposition. He called it the Racing Festival of the South, where the final week of our racing season, we'd run, a stakes race every day of that final week. That kind of has morphed into what we see now in, like, the Breeders' Cup and days like today when we've got four stakes races, Florida Derby Day at Gulfstream. They've got, like, nine stakes races. So that's kind of, it all started with the, one stakes a day format that Charles Sella came up with in the early 70s.
Yeah. And Louis Sella actually went to Washington and Lee University, same place as Chris Chenery. he's an ODAC guy. He went to school here in Virginia, so we love the ODAC here on Off to the Races and, of course, in Virginia. Let's take a look at the Arkansas Derby, a field of 10. I did not see any scratches yet. It's still early in the day, especially in the central time zone, but Timberlake comes off of winning the Rebel Stakes, looking to vindicate that win, I guess, that In the Mischief with Flavian Prackett in the mount today, taking over. Mystic Dan, Ken McPeak's horse with Brian Hernandez, comes in after winning a muddy Southwest Stakes, 5-2. And then you have guys, this is interesting race. Baffert has the favorite Muth coming in, and the Baffert situation is unnecessary is a word you hear often about, that situation. But, it's great to see him come back and bring a horse to the Arkansas Derby. And then you even have Dwayne Lucas saddling one with Just Steel. I mean, this race has everything today.
Well, it does, and what's great about this race, Arkansans really like it when Arkansas people own good horses. And Mystic Dan is owned by a group of Arkansans. Time for Truth is owned by Harry Rosenblum, along with Cheyenne Stables. He is a longtime fixture, longtime owner at Oaklawn. We kind of consider, Winchell Thoroughbreds as being one of our own because he started racing here forever, a long, long time ago. And Willis Horton Racing is, Willis Horton, the late Willis Horton, his son is running that outfit now, and, he's from Marshall, Arkansas. So we love it when Arkansas owners are able to, get the quality of horses that allow them to run in races like this. I like Mystic Dan a lot today. I think a lot of people are discounting that Southwest Stakes when he won by 8 lengths is thinking that the muddy or the sealed track moved him up. I don't think it did at all. I think if you throw out his Smarty Jones effort when he ran kind of even fifth around the racetrack, he had kind of a fever that day that they didn't know about till after the race. He came back and won the Southwest. Now, we had to delay the Southwest this year because we had a lot of bad weather in January. We lost 5 racing days, so people weren't able to train on the racetrack. So it was actually scheduled for the last week of January, so we pushed it back a week. That did impact, I think, the Rebel. Because of the now a 3-week gap between the Southwest and the Rebel rather than the planned 4 or 5 week gap. So Mystic Dan skipped the Rebel, but we got Timberlake for the Rebel, so we got a Southwest winner against a Rebel winner, and then, Baffert comes in with Muth. A lot of people, the hot horse around here, to be honest with you, is the 5-horse Liberal Arts, who ran 3rd in the Southwest. People were very, very impressed with the way he galloped out at the end of that race. He won the Street Sense, a Grade 3 race in Kentucky, and his last start as a 2-year-old. He's been pointing for this race since he won that race. So, there's a lot of angles that you can pursue in this.
Yeah, you look at this race, you got the big three. They're going to take Mystic Dan, Timberlake, Muth, they're going to draw a lot of money. And then you see, like, Asmussen has three horses in the morning line. His best chance is 20-1. But I was looking at that horse, Liberal Arts. That I like the breeding of that horse. He's been running with the likes of Mystic Dan and Just Steel. Running fairly well. Has actually beaten Informed Patriot, who's part of the field, and that big leap to 15-1. If you can get past the top three here, you really have a lot of opportunity to cash and cash well.
It'll be interesting to see how the wagering shapes up. I personally think I think Liberal Arts is going to be a little bit shorter than 15-1, and I think Mystic Dan's going to be a little bit higher than 5-2. I think people are going to jump all over Timberlake. Brad Cox going for his third consecutive Arkansas Derby win. He won last year with Angel of Empire, the year before with Cyberknife. He's been a very, very hot, particularly in these prep races. He won the Louisiana Derby last week with the horse that ran in our Smarty Jones Stakes, won our Smarty Jones Stakes back in January. So that race is also key in this race. So what I would do, and what I've done this week, is just go back and really have looked over and over again at the Smarty Jones Stakes, the Southwest, and the Rebel, and just kind of see who in those races may jump off at you. Just Steel, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a pretty good race in the Southwest. He ran a good second in the Smarty Jones, but for whatever reason, in the Rebel, he just didn't really run his race. Mr. Lucas believes that he didn't like being in the outside post position, and that is kind of a tough spot to win at Oaklawn, particularly going a mile and a 16th. It's not as bad going a mile and an 8th. So if he jumps up and runs back to the way he ran in the Southwest or the Smarty Jones, he's another one who's at 15-1 in the morning line that I think you have to include, at least underneath.
Yeah, Keith Asmussen gets the mount. Different rider, actually going up against another Asmussen. I mean, that's kind of a unique situation there. Justified,
well,
Brad, too.
Well, yeah, and Keith is he's been the story of the racing season this year. He's won his, he's got the mount in the fantasy today. This is the race beforehand with Lemon Muffin, who he broke his maiden on in the Grade 3 Honeybee, or her maiden on. Keith and Mr. Lucas have a very long relationship, and Keith is the story, is one of the best stories at Oaklawn this meet, because he's a young guy who's, 25 years old. He started riding 3 years ago. His parents, Steve Asmussen and his mother, made him, finish his college degree. So he's a master's. He's the most highly educated jockey, I think, in the history of horse racing. He has a master's degree in accounting from the University of Texas. He finished his degree, both of his bachelor's and his master's degree, then went back to riding. And because he's tall, he's about 5'10". So he has to really watch his weight, and he does a good job with it. But when he started out, he did not take any apprentice allowance because he couldn't get down to that weight. So he waived all his apprentice allowances when he was younger. But if you look at the way he's been riding this meet, he's just been phenomenal. I mean, you can just see him improve with every mount. He rarely makes mistakes anymore. He's a strong finisher. He can get a horse to relax underneath him. So, I mean, he's one of the best stories of the racing season so far.
Yeah, just plenty coming out of Arkansas and Oaklawn Park. David, thanks for joining us. David Longinotti from Oaklawn Park. We appreciate it, and have a great day at the Derby.
All right, thank you. You guys need to get down here one time.
Absolutely. Oh, bucket list track. Major bucket. I'm looking at it here on a map right now of Oaklawn. Got to get that Oaklawn Fairgrounds exact in, perhaps next spring.
There you go.
David Longinotti joining us from Oaklawn. We're headed to break here. We're going to go from Oaklawn Park when we come back a little bit to Miami. And start looking at that Florida Derby as well as Frank Vespi will join us on the other side with John Pizazic as well. You're listening to Off to the Races, powered by the Racing Biz.
Nothing compares to a horse. They inspire greatness, command respect. because Virginia's horse industry isn't just racing and farming. It's built on the skills, labors, and passions of dedicated people working in every industry throughout our state. Horses fuel the economy, create jobs, support thousands of families, and even make dreams come true. Virginia's economy wins with horses. Find out more at virginiahorseracing.com.
Horses are at the gate and ready for action this spring at Shenandoah Downs in Woodstock. A big seven-week season of harness horse racing kicks off on Saturday, April 6th with a commemorative t-shirt giveaway to the first 500 fans. Racing continues Sunday, April 7th with $2 canned beer, $1 hot dogs, and more weekend giveaways courtesy of Standing Stallions. Watch, wager, and win every weekend through May 19th, including Kentucky Derby and Preakness Day. Parking and admission are always free. Details are at shenandoahdowns.com.
Nothing compares to a horse. They inspire greatness, command respect. Because Virginia's horse industry isn't just racing and farming. It's built on the skills, labors, and passions of dedicated people working in every industry throughout our state. Horses fuel the economy, create jobs, support thousands of families, and even make dreams come true. Virginia's economy wins with horses. Find out more at virginiahorseracing.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespi here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by theracingbiz.com. And thanks to our friends at the Virginia Equine Alliance for their support of Off to the Races. Want to turn our attention here for a minute or three to Laurel Park in Maryland. This segment, the feature race of the day from Laurel Park, presented by our friends at the Maryland Jockey Club. Going to be joined here by John Piazzik. John Piazzik's last name is Dead, courtesy of Nick Hahn, who has done everything to that poor name possible. Sorry, Nick, got to run you down a little bit. Anyway, John, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Hello, good morning, my friend. Let's take a gander at race 8 here at Laurel Park. It's a second level allowance going a mile and a 16th. Got a pretty interesting field of 8 runners here, which is a little bulky for the mile and a 16th with the short run up to the first turn. Tell me what you see here in the 8th race at Laurel Park, John.
Well, I think Brittany Russell kind of has them surrounded in here. I picked her two horses on top, number 4, Mind Tap, and number 8, Frightland. I think Mind Tap is a bit more of a likely winner, owned by Michael Poli and St. Elias, who obviously have a big day down in Florida today. This one broke his maiden first off a year-plus layoff at Parks last December, and since then has been getting better with every start. One going away in his first start on this track back in early January, then faced what I thought was a better field than this one at this level last time out. He was up on a fairly honest pace for this level, made a move into the teeth of that pace, ended up fading late, but on the Brisnet speed figure scale, matched his career top figure. He's still pretty lightly raced, still fairly young, had some good workouts since then, should get a nice trip and pounds. Russell's other horse in here is number 8, Frightland, and he's getting a pretty big class test in here. He's won his last two starts by open lengths with big figures both times. However, both of those were against softer fields than what he'll see here. He crushed a nominee of the 3 group in his 2024 debut back on February 11th. Soundly beat Storming Crow, who came back to win his next start, then stepped up against Maryland bred allowance foes back on March 1st. Battle on the pace, still kicked away and won as much the best. He had some good figures last year, kind of had a bit of a December swoon, got some time off at the start of the year, starting around back into his best self. If he can handle this gut punch, he should be pretty interesting, and it's definitely going to be the better value of the two Russell trainees.
Yeah, interesting thing here. Two interesting things on Frightland. One, heavy on Toledo, the jockey, rode both Mind Tap and Frightland last time out, lands on Frightland in this spot. And note the third place horse from that last race, Dolce Vita. That horse had finished second in the race in which Mind Tap finished fourth. So if you want to make a case for Frightland, that's the case to make. How do you see the pace here, John, as it tops the chart, goes to the front?
I think more likely than not. And he should be pretty tough on the front end. I picked him third in my analysis on the RacingBiz.com. He lasted through pace, pressure, and won at this level at Parks 2 starts ago, back on February 21st. Then last time out on a very wet track at this condition back on March 9th, lasted through very fast fractions going down that long 1 2-mile backstretch. Led late, got caught in the last few jumps by Hate Chief. Still a big effort, however. He should be sent right to the front as long as he breaks cleanly. And, you know, I'm not sure how much pace pressure he'll get. I think Mind Tap is going to sit close to him. But if Mind Tap ends up letting him get too far away, it could be a pretty cozy pace for Tops the Trot.
He may be tough to reel in if they let him go. If they heat it up, a horse who's going to be running at the end, or a couple of them are on the inside, Armando R. and Bodie's Maker. Anything, any love for either of those kind of horses?
I mean, Armando R. is kind of neat. I mean, it's always kind of cool to see a horse who comes from that far out of it. But he just does not have enough early speed to win this race. His only win in his recent Lions came when he was about 3 1/4 lengths off the early pace, and even then, he just barely got up to win. In most of his other races, he's coming from about 20 lengths off the early lead. Think he'll just leave himself with too much to do. Bodie's Maker, it was 5th behind Mind Tap in that same race back on February 17th. He's won 3 straight Prisoner figures in the 90s, so he's a pretty solid sort as far as consistency goes, and in fact, was an expert in Russell training. He got claimed 2 starts back by current owner Horatio DePaz. He has a little more early speed than Armando R. should at least get the jump on them, and I think he's a pretty decent pick for an exotic spot.
All right, John Piazza going 4.87 in the 8th race, the Laurel Park feature today, second level allowance for older runners. John, you also have a late pick 5 ticket that starts in race 6. Quickly give us the lowdown.
Sure. Race number 6, Maiden Flaming Field of 3-year-olds going 5.5 furlongs. I went 4 deep in here. Number 2, Bandit's Golden Child, a half-brother to Mid-Atlantic sprinting star Anna's Bandit. He's shown speed and held in well in his first 2 starts. Took a bit of a step backwards last time out, but obviously there's a lot of upside with him. And before Summer, State of Mind should also show early speed, and he's improved in his last 2 starts. Lasted through very fast fractions last time out and only lost by a half length. Number 6, Taji Mike, well bet on debut. Broke slowly, still closed well behind Summer State of Mind, who was 2nd that day. 3rd place finisher, Restless, came back to win his next start. I think Taji Mike is eligible to take a step forward. And number 7, Stellar's In Charge, stepped up to this level for the first time last out and ran a big race. Adds blinkers here, goes first off the claim by Anthony Ferrier, and should be a major pace presence from the outside. Race number 7 is a field of 3-year-old claimers going 5.5 furlongs. I liked number 3, Irish Bandit, as a long shot. However, he has scratched, so I think it's pretty much down to only 2 of these, and I'll use both of them. Number 5, One Way Barrier, came from off the pace at this level last time out, won by a length in a much improved effort after kind of 2 sub hard races. He should be closing late, and he outkicked number 7, Force of Justice, in that race. It was 2nd that day. This one has faced better for most of the year, has a lot of early speed, and could clear from the outside, especially with Jamie Rodriguez in the saddle for the first time. Talk about race 8, I'll go 4.78 in there. And I'm closing out the sequence with 2 singles. Race number 9 is a second level allowance optional claiming race for fillies and mares going a mile and a 16th. Number 5, Western Lane, for Kerry Breon and Victor Carrasco. Ran a big race 2 starts back against first level company on a wet track. It was a track favoring horses who were on the lead and for the rail, not really conducive to her style. However, she still closed well and finished a solid 2nd, then got a pace to close into last time out and has gobbled up ground 1 1/4 lengths going away. There's some speed in here in number 2, Patty Cakes, and number 6, This Name Is Okay. Both tough rivals, however, both of them really want the front, and if they burn each other up, it could set things up very nicely for Western Lane at a good price. I'll use just her in that leg. So, and then, yeah, race number 10, open $5,000 claiming field, Fillies and Mares, mile and a 16th. Number one, Dunvegan Doll is my single, going first off the claim by Anthony Ferrier. Any of her recent races at Mahoning Valley just crushed this group. It's a pretty inconsistent bunch outside of her. She'll get a nice trip on the inside, and as long as there's a hole opening up on the far turn, she'll slide right through and draw away.
All right, John Piazzik, late pick five ticket. You call it 50 cent race six, 50 cent pick five, 2, 4, 6, 7 with 5, 7 with 4, 7, 8 with 5, with 1. That's going to be a $12 ticket. John going 4, 8, 7 here in the featured eighth at Laurel Park today. John Piazzik, thanks for joining us. Good luck today at the races.
Thank you, Frank. Take care.
All right, Nick, that is Laurel Park Feature Race of the Day presented by our friends at the Maryland Jockey Club.
Yeah, looking at good weather, I think, at Laurel today, a little bit different. I guess a little tougher travels to the state legislature this week for you, Frank, with the bridge collapse there in Baltimore.
Yeah,
I mean,
very bad.
What a scene up there, and town's certainly rallying behind it, but just a tragic situation there. But in the legislature up in Annapolis, I guess there's been some movement on the future of Pimlico and how things might move forward. What'd you learn on the racing biz?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on this briefly, Nick, because it is important, and it's important to the future of Maryland racing. The legislation, HB 1524, is designed to sort of jumpstart or kickstart the so-called Pimlico Plus plan that the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority has crafted. If that plan were to come to fruition and be put into effect, it would lead to the renovation of Pimlico Racecourse as the home of Maryland racing. It would lead to the creation of a new training center to support year-round racing in Maryland. It would lead to the closure of Laurel Park. And it would lead to the creation of a nonprofit entity that would run racing on behalf of the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority, taking over from the private ownership model that we've had for all of our history right now, which is the Stronach Group. That legislation was portrayed to me and others as pretty much of a slam dunk. The governor's behind it, et cetera, et cetera. It is expected to go through the House on Monday, but it's run into some headwinds here a little bit. Part of what they're going to do to pay off bonds that would be issued to support these facilities is to take some money that was previously targeted to facility renewal at Rosecroft, the harness track in Fort Washington, Maryland. The harness interests are not very happy about this in general. The Stronach Group owns Rosecroft, so they're good with it. But other harness interests are not, because they feel like they could use that money to winterize the other harness track in the state, Ocean Downs, and get more days there to replace days they would lose at Rosecroft. And then there's some concern in the Senate that this legislation may leave the taxpayers on the hook for funding some of it if there are shortfalls. So we don't yet know what's going to happen here. We don't know how this is all going to play out. It does have some momentum, but I think the headwinds are maybe a little bit stronger than people thought they might be. So stay tuned. It's got to get decided this week. It's got to pass the House and Senate in identical form by April 8th in order to go to the governor, because the legislative session ends April 8th. So coming soon to theracingbiz.com, we'll have the latest on what's going on here with the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority legislation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, lots of happenings there. And yeah, you can find it all on theracingbiz.com. We'll try and keep our guests in the future down to two syllables so I can pronounce them a little bit better.
But, sorry, I had to do that to you. You know that.
There were some long ones today, especially after a night at Ragged Branch.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'll grant you that. It's a tough one.
Yeah, great. Great job, Frank. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Good luck today, Nick.
Great. Frank Vespi and John Piazzik. Piazzik. There we go. Maybe I got it close that time. Yeah, in Virginia, sort of the same situation with these gray games. Legislation is sitting there on the governor's desk. And you've heard me talk about it a few times on the show where it's just not right that after 80 years of lobbying and all the referendum controls and terminal controls, you know, these gray games are allowed to come in fighting the state all the way to the Supreme Court, losing in the Supreme Court, and then getting favorable legislation. It's just not cooperative. And racing does, if anything, it should be delayed a year or so, if anything, so that we can measure the impacts and figure out what this really is. It is being rushed through. The governor needs to veto this as well. Want to move on to our next segment here, as promised in the first half of the show. Had an opportunity to speak with Ron Turcotte, the jockey of Secretariat, yesterday on the statue dedication later today at Ashland. Virginia bred, obviously set the record in the Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont Stakes, and just a wonderful honor to speak with Ron Turcotte. Every time I speak to him, I just learn something more, and how close what struck me in this conversation, the first part will air this week, second part next week, is how close none of this ever came to happening. There was a lot of skill, a lot of talent, but in the end, the stars absolutely lined up. But let's start with Ron Turcotte, and I asked him about the statue and Joslyn Russell's work on it and what she had to go through in terms of the effort and the professionalism of putting this wonderful statue together.
Joslyn Russell came here 2, 3, 4 times, I think, and to make sure that, you know, she had everything right, you know, the dimension of the horse compared to, you know, like me on him and all that, muscle, the way was muscle. And she spent some time working at it to have it perfect.
Took a lot of time to put it together, very closely detail-oriented work, and this is just, it's a huge statue. Turcotte is probably 300 pounds. I mean, it is just a giant monument and well-deserved and merited for a horse of that caliber. Turcotte almost didn't get involved in racing. We've talked about how he was actually about to go back to New Brunswick and work on a worm farm when someone suggested that he should take a look at maybe exercising horses. Here's how Turcotte entered racing.
Oh, I went to Ontario to look for other work, but the carpenters were on strike. I was there to do some roofing, like my brother had done the year before me. But with the carpenter on strike, there was no roof nailed down. So I was about ready to come back cutting lumber when somebody suggested me to try the racetrack. And boy, am I glad I did. Plus, when I saw the horses, I was a real horse lover. From the time I can remember. And I learned to handle horses from my dad, to feed them and all that. I learned when I was 14 years old, and started working in the lumber. So I thank my dad a lot for teaching me all the basic about horses. I can thank trainers at Winfield Farm for helping me learn how to gallop with in a saddle, and then gallop horses, and then work them. Then I have to turn Gordon Huntley from Ontario, who was like a father to me, and he put me on horses, started me riding, and giving me every mount in the barn, and he trusted me that much. That was a big thing. He gave me all the confidence in the world. You know, he kept telling me what I was doing good, when I was doing the right thing and everything. So, you know, that makes you always, that picks you up and makes you do a better job.
82-year-old Ron Turcotte speaking there, the jockey of Secretariat. Not only did his opportunity almost didn't happen, it almost didn't happen for the farm itself, if not for Riva Ridge. This is very important for Turcotte. He acknowledges that without Riva Ridge, there may not have been a Secretariat. Here's what he had to say about how Riva Ridge saved the Chenery Farm.
Riva Ridge, yeah. Save the farm so we could keep Secretariat. If you didn't win, all that money was in the champion 2-year old and won over $500,000. That helped a lot in keeping the farm. So we had a chance. Plus, he was a favorite for the Kentucky Derby when Mr. Chenery passed away, but he had made enough money, I guess, to he could keep the farm. So we were the recipient of the greatest horse that ever lived.
Yeah, greatest horse, and maybe the biggest one when it comes to a statue dedicated later today. What would be a day like today without actually asking the very simple question of what it was like to race Secretariat? You might be surprised on what Turcotte says he thought was Secretariat's best moment. Here's what he said about schooling and riding Secretariat.
You know, when you have a chance to be on horses and work them before they get them ready for their big races and all that, it's a big edge. And once you got in school, just ride. And you know they're right, like we were for the Triple Crown. And you can make the move you want, like take him from last in a derby and move him when I thought it was ready and my running down the stretch. Then take the Preakness. I thought that was the biggest race of them all. You know, the Belmont looks like the biggest race, but in my opinion, I think the move I made in the Preakness, the move around the first turn, shows the confidence I had in my horse. And then the Belmont, same thing, hook it up with Shame the way I did, going a mile and a half. It looked like a match race for a while, and then Secretariat relaxed so well with me that he could have run all day long.
Yeah, that's jockey Ron Turcotte speaking with his French-Canadian accent, and he became a paraplegic, unfortunately, in 1978, but his mind is sharp. I can assure you of that, and he did a great job yesterday. Want to talk about the Florida Derby here? Got a few moments left in the show, an opportunity to catch up perhaps with Barry Spears here on Off to the Races. The Florida Derby has two scratches in it. Bail Us Out, the number 3 horse, is a scratch, and number 8, Seminole Chief, will be a scratch. And we'll be going a mile and an eighth here in the Florida Derby. Fierceness That is a race that here he's going to be the elephant in the race, if you will, fierceness. And Barry, thanks for just taking a few moments here. We wanted to get an opinion from Florida, of you being in Tampa for the Florida Derby. Good morning. What do you think about the Florida Derby today?
It's a very interesting race. You know, you have a horse in fierceness who, you know, has some question marks. I think the horse is probably the best horse in the race. But really have to get out and clear of everybody else. And if you're gambling on that, his morning line price is something you kind of want to avoid.
Not your style, I know, in terms of being the sniper and betting a little to steal the whole pool. Maybe an opportunity here with fierceness, and also the Arkansas Derby as well, an opportunity with some big favorites. There's some contenders outside of the favorites.
Yeah, I think over in Arkansas, I think Liberal Arts, who ran very good, needed that race in the last time over there at Oaklawn, and will really improve off that race, I think, and sets that one horse up really, really well for today.
Giving the picks, why don't you give us a pick for the Florida Derby, the Arkansas Derby? What's your double there in the prep races that have yet to be run today?
You know, I'm going to give Real Macho a chance out of that weird Fountain of Youth race, where I don't think the race shape really kind of favored that horse, and it was kind of slow, and Doorknock kind of had his way with it. But the race prior to that, that horse ran really, really well. In that optional claimer 35, and that is more of a representative race of what you're going to see today, and I think that one has a, you know, a improvement in them. And then in Oaklawn at the Arkansas Derby, I'm all about Liberal Arts. I think that horse is the goods.
Name came up in an earlier segment with David Longinati, believe it or not, Liberal Arts and Opportunity. So yeah, Forever Young looked pretty good at in Dubai this morning.
Yeah, I mean, at least at this point, you might have to think that horse has probably looked the best out of any three-year-old we've seen that's on the Derby trail, per se. But, you know, remains to be seen whether that horse comes over or not. If he does, he's going to be tough.
Yeah. Great job, Barry. Thanks for stepping in at the last moment. And good luck today.
All right, thanks.
Barry Spears, an urban handicapper, joining us on Off to the Races. Want to thank Ron Turcott, Daryl Wood, David Longinati, John Piazzik, Frank Vespi, and tune us in next week. We'll have the second half of the Turcott interview, and we'll recap all the racing action. We're less than 6 weeks away from the Kentucky Derby. Check us out next week, post time, 10 o'clock.